Right. Well, basically, I was in between my senior year in high school, right? I was a camp counselor at the University of Pennsylvania Camp for Underprivileged Kids. I was a camp counselor, right? And then the next year, I was a waterfront director at a private camp out in Bucks County. And while I was at the camp, I had a penknife and I started to carve, because you're at a camp and you're just carving. Of course, I cut that myself so many times. And the very first piece I ever carved was a little horse, and I put it on a board that was shaped a little funny. And there was a girl up on the hill. She was in a wheelchair. I guess she had polio. And I gave her that horse after the summer was over. And
what year was that?
That would have been
1962. Okay.
1962. I went to West Catholic High School. I graduated in 1962, and I played football, and I played trumpet, trombone, and baritone horn in the band. I was vice president of the band, and I got turned down by 50 or 60 colleges because I was too small. I was only 5'5", 165, and I finally went up to Temple, and I challenged the coach to a fight, or one-on-one, you know what I mean, because he said I was too small to play there. So I told him I'd kick his ass or get his best football player, and I would beat him up too. So they thought I had a big mouth, and then they started asking me about guys I played against that they were recruiting, and I told them that they were stupid because I beat the shit out of all of those guys. And so the next day, they wanted to see my films, and they brought the films in, and they watched 10 hours of film, and they gave me a fees, books, and tuition scholarship. So I was captain of the freshman team, and then I started on the varsity as a sophomore. And by my senior year, I was All-East Player of the Week, All-State, All-Conference, and captain of the team. Then they hired me as a coach. And while I was coaching, there was a group that came in from the Peace Corps to talk to the phys ed program about needing Peace Corps volunteers in Ecuador for phys ed. We were supposed to train teachers, phys ed teachers in Ecuador. And the voice told me that I had to do that. So I joined the Peace Corps. I quit coaching in college and I joined the Peace Corps. I was married. I had just gotten married, and my wife was a nurse. But they sent us to Venezuela instead of in Ecuador, where I wanted to go. And so we were in a little tiny village called La Prision, which was a village of about maybe 20 mud huts. And we were living, my wife was taking care of it, girls there were getting pregnant at 12 years old, 13 years old, you know what I mean? And so she had a lot to do with natal care and that type of thing. And I was developing sports programs for the school. There was a little school not too far away. And the mayor of the village, he only wanted to play baseball. He wanted me to coach baseball because that was a national pastime in Venezuela. So we cut out a baseball field out of the jungle and start playing baseball. And of course, the temperature there was like 95 degrees every day with 100% humidity. So you were... And then I never drank until I got there, and then they started handing me a beer after practice, and you would sit around drinking beer and getting potty. And so then I built a volleyball court because we had a poor concrete. I had to teach them how to mix concrete and everything. And then I worked on my uncle's farm in a summer, so I knew how to raise corn and chickens and things like that. So we did that because I couldn't get any chickens or food, you know, in the village. They were eating iguana tails and stuff like that. So I was teaching. Then I got into, my dad taught me when I was a kid, I'd go down to the basement, he would teach me how to make a cutting board shaped like a pig. You know, everybody had a little pig board, you know, that you chopped your meat on. So I start teaching the kids how to make cutting boards. I got some coping saws.
In Venezuela. Yeah.
And I was trying to start a little cottage industry in the village so that they would, you know, the kids could get a little bit of income. So we started doing that, and I took them to a state fair, and there were these unbelievable wood carvings in the state fair, and nobody in Venezuela does any artistic thing like that unless you're at the University of Caracas or something like that. But the people don't do anything. you go to Ecuador or Colombia, and every village has a shoemaker and a harp maker and a banjo maker and a guitar maker and a clothing maker. In Venezuela, you don't have any of that because they had too much oil money, basically, and they got spoiled. So I was teaching kids how to make breadboards and things like that. We took them to a state fair, and I met this. There were these unbelievable wood carvings in the state fair, and I found out that the guy who made them was the leading wood carver from Ecuador, where I knew I should have had to go in the first place, and he was teaching in Venezuela for 1 year, wood carving at the university in Venezuela, in Barquisimeto. And I saw those wood carvings, and I went up to him, and I said, "You got to teach me how to do this," you know. So he looked at me like I'm some crazy gringo, because he had been wood carving for 50 years. So he took a piece of wood, and he put my hand on it, and drew my hand with a pencil, and he gave me two tools. And he said, "Go home and look at your hand and carve your hand, and then I'll tell you whether I'll teach you," you know. Later on, he said, "I figured I'd just get rid of you, and I'd lose two tools." So I went back to my village. My village was about 6 hours away by jeep from him. So I went back to my village and I carved my hand. I looked at my hand, I carved my hand, and I brought it back to him, and he was amazed that, you know, he didn't believe I was ever coming back, number one. And number two, he said, "Who did that?" So I said, "Well, I did." He said, "Well, you already carved, you know." So he taught me how to lay out a face, how to lay out a figure. He carved realism. He didn't do abstract. So he could carve you down to your last whisker. You know, I mean, he was a fantastic wood. Matter of fact, he worked for Walt Disney. Walt Disney would bring him up to Florida to carve pieces for Walt Disney for his animations and all.
Did he teach you how to sharpen your tools?
That was the most important thing, right? Sharpening tools is the most important thing. Now, those tools, all the tools he had were made right there in the little village from automobile car springs. They would take the automobile, because it was really good steel, and then they had forges and everything, and they would hand tap the thing, to get it red hot, hand tap it and shape it into gouges and all. And so he taught me how to sharpen tools, basically, so that you could get them so razor sharp that you could actually shave with them, you know what I mean? And that was probably the best thing that I got out of it, because that's important as hell, you know what I mean, to be able to do that.
How did you address him? What did you call him?
Homero. His name was Homero Tovar.
You called him Homero.
Yeah, because he was maybe 45 years old when I met him, and I was 25, and of course I was a jefe too. You know, they called jefes. The boss was a jefe, and I was, and I was a teacher as well. So basically he. We were on the same level, basically, of interaction.
Did you speak Spanish?
Well, yeah. When I went into the Peace Corps, the first thing you do is go, you have 3 months of training. I was sent down to the University of Arizona, where we had 3 months of training, and you had Spanish every day, 7 days a week, for 6 hours a day, for 7 days a week. If you couldn't master the language, they didn't send you down. They wouldn't send you. So you had to speak Spanish, because nobody spoke English. So you come into a country where everybody speaks Spanish. Now, I lived in a little tiny village where the people didn't speak good Spanish. They spoke gutter Spanish, you know, the same as, you know.
Their own dialects.
And every other word was a curse word. Same as, like, you get, when I was teaching in high school here, every other word out of some kid's mouth is a curse word. You know, screw this, screw that, screw that, you know.
But did you hit a lot of kids in high school?
I didn't hit a lot of, I didn't have to hit a lot of kids. What I would do is, I only slugged one or two kids in my whole 30-year career. But what I would do to a kid who wanted to fight me, they all wanted to fight you, you know. And they were all bigger than I was, because there's this high school, I'm only 5'5", and they're all, you know, taller. So I would say, "Well, before I fight you, I don't mind fighting, but let's see how strong you are." And I would take them up to the weight room. And now at that time, I could bench press 350. And I could clean and jerk 200 pounds. And they couldn't do that at all. So I'd say, "Okay, let's see what you can do." And of course, they couldn't do it. They weren't that strong. So they would back off eventually. And I would say, "Okay, you're not very strong. Let's see how quick you are." And I'd take them down and play handball against the wall. And I kicked the shit out, beat them 21 to nothing in handball, because I was a really good handball player. And so I said, well, you're not very quick, you know. And I said, you sure you want to fight me? And most, you know, they would back off, most of them, you know. Then I'd play basketball with them. I said, okay, one-on-one, let's play one-on-one. Make you take it, you know, no fouls. No fouls were called, right? And I beat the hell out of them. I would knock them down, and I beat them in basketball, which was their game. And so I had very few fights. I only had one or two fights. And I had to take maybe four or five guns off of kids and knives. I took those off them all the time. And so it was always a matter of doing it the right way. You know, I'm saying you had to do it the right way. But after a while, you get a reputation that you know, you don't screw with him. They used to call me Barney Rubble, you know, because I look like one. Don't screw with Barney.
How old are you now?
I'm 79.
And still working every day?
Yeah.
A few days a week?
Yeah. I still work every day, you know. The only thing it's been running through my mind that I got to do is I got to start to get up at around 4 o'clock and walk 3 or 4 miles a day now. Just to get better wind, you know, at this point in time. But so that's, you know, but that's every day is a challenge, you know. But I feel lucky I have a day because I got off an airplane to crash and everybody was killed. So every day I figure if I can't get it done today, I'm not going to get it done probably. I look at it that way. This is one extra day, you know. So, but,